So after weeks of shuttle diplomacy, this week Secretary of State John Kerry has brought Israeli and Palestinian leaders together for the first peace talks in over 3 years.
Many difficult choices lie ahead for the negotiators and for the leaders as we seek reasonable compromises on tough, complicated, emotional, and symbolic issues.
A lot of questions about what's going to happen from these talks. This is a great moment to speak with Ambassador Dennis Ross, former Middle East peace negotiator under Presidents George H.W. Bush and President Clinton. He's currently counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Ambassador Ross, welcome to The Takeaway.
Nice to be with you. Thank you.
Do you think there's a real opportunity here? It's my sense that nothing can really be done while Egypt and Syria and so much of the Middle East is in turmoil right now. This looks like an attempt to get some sort of a deal under the radar with so much going on in the Middle East. What's your assessment?
Well, I think you just put your finger on something which is seemingly paradoxical. On the one hand, in the midst of all this turmoil, that would seem to create a kind of chilling effect for doing anything. On the other hand, it's precisely this notion of under the radar. Everybody in the region is completely preoccupied with everything else except the Israeli-Palestinian issue. And precisely because of that, that actually creates some political space for Israelis and Palestinians alike to do something, number one, without necessarily the same kind of fear of a backlash from the traditional quarters you would expect of the rejectionists. And at the same time, that very turmoil also gives them some incentive to think about maybe we should try to work something out before that turmoil comes here.
How much are these talks, do you think, an attempt to redeem John Kerry's longstanding relationship with the principals here, his sense of credibility and goodwill among all the parties here in the first really major initiative of his tenure as Secretary of State?
Well, I think it does have a lot to do with it because he has developed a relationship with both leaders over a very long period of time. In the case of Prime Minister Netanyahu, he actually knows him going back to the time when Prime Minister Netanyahu was in Boston. So it's a very long historical relationship. In the case of Abu Mazen, he's cultivated a relationship from the time that he was in the Senate for a very long period of time. The value of having those personal relationships is in many ways hard to quantify. I mean, one of the things I can tell you is, as someone who negotiated for a long time in this area, there's no substitute for personal relationships. By itself, it's not enough, but without it, you're unlikely to overcome some of the hurdles that you're going to have to overcome. Bear in mind, this is a historic conflict where leaders have to take on history and mythology, and it means there's a very strong psychological, emotional element to any negotiations. And the relationship that a Secretary of State has with leaders therefore becomes really an important asset. And I think in this particular case, Secretary Kerry has that.
More important than President Obama's relationship with the principals here?
Well, again, you know, it may seem counterintuitive. But if you look at the history of peacemaking in this part of the world, Secretaries of State have often been the pivotal figures. Secretary Kissinger was. President Nixon, President Ford were not. In the case of President Carter, obviously, it was a different story. But if you take a look at during the first Bush administration, it was Jim Baker. It wasn't President Bush. It was Jim Baker who forged the Madrid Conference and basically ended an era of basically politics or diplomacy through denial. So I would say a lot depends upon the role that a Secretary of State can play. And while the president is important and may be critical at certain moments, the fact of the matter is, if a Secretary of State has this kind of a relationship, it may well be something that is essential.
I tend to be rather theatrical, as you well know, on some of these things. I suspect the negotiators are sitting down. I have this vision of them looking at a bunch of old coffee-stained folders, looking at all of the initiatives going back over the last 15, 20 years that have attempted to forge some sort of pathway to the really tough issues. What are they looking at in terms of a process, or are we going to start anew here and do something called the Washington Initiative?
Well, I do think it's can't be a case of you just reinventing the wheel. I mean, this has been a wheel that's turned many times before, as you indicate. But I do think what's going on here is a chance to start anew And in effect, I think what they're probably doing is sort of two things. First, they've got to figure out, all right, what's the rhythm of our negotiations going to be? What are the modalities of the negotiations going to be? How often should we meet? How does the U.S. fit into it? Where should we meet? Presumably, it's going to be in the area because that's where they live. And you want to have negotiators who are close to the leaders. One of the reasons the negotiations really always have to take place out there is because that's where the leaders are. And the negotiators can't stray too far from where the leaders are because they get their guidance from them. They're basically told what they can do and what they can't do. They need to check with the leaders. So I suspect what you see is part procedure right now and part an agenda-setting approach. And then they have to figure out conceptually, all right, what are the issues that we want to deal with first? They'll know what are the full array of issues, but maybe what they'll try to do a little differently is maybe they'll try to come at some of these issues a little differently and see if they can pick out one or two and begin a process where they look for ways to make some early progress. I mean, one key point that I've constantly made, we're dealing in a context of disbelief with the two publics. The Israeli public doesn't believe that the Palestinians are serious about pursuing a two-state outcome, and the Palestinian public doesn't believe the Israelis are serious about pursuing a two-state outcome. They need to see that something's different this time. This is the 20th year of Oslo, so they need to see that something's different this time. And I think that means not only tackling certain issues maybe a little differently, but maybe it also means what can you do at the same time to show life's going to change on the ground as a way of getting both publics to take a second look at the whole process.
Peace process under the radar, looking for signals of substantive talks. Ambassador Dennis Ross, former Middle East peace negotiator under Presidents George H.W. Bush and Clinton, currently counselor at the Washington Institute for Near East Policy. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.